Blog Talk Radio.
The following program is brought to you by Firefly Willows LIVE.
Hello and welcome to Discovering Taoist Wicca with your host, Susie Lady Redhawk Peltier. Susie has served the goddess and the principle of holism for nearly 30 years as a third degree Wiccan priestess, Reiki master teacher, massage therapist, and hypnotherapist. With a degree in holistic health and a background in medical anthropology, she has pursued a burning question. How is ritual used for healing? 20 years ago, Lady Redhawk established Dragon Spirit Taoist Wiccan Circle, which continues to grow with practitioners and circles in the U.S., Holland, Ireland, France, and Peru. Susie Lady Redhawk will be taking us through the Wiccan ritual and Sabbath of Ostara, and I'm John Carosella. Susie, let's
Hi, get John started.
This is going to be a great show.
I'm so happy to sit here and be with you again and talk about a balance point.
Is that what we're going to talk about?
Yeah.
Balance?
Spring equinox is the first of two balance points in Taoist Wicca. If you think of, if you remember the circle we've been talking about, the wheel of the year,
right.
you can draw a horizontal line, and that's your solstices.
A vertical line.
And then now, we're drawing the horizontal line.
Right.
We're coming to the equinoxes, which means equal length, day and night.
Right. So we've been through Yule, which was the winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
We've been through
the turning point.
We've been through Imbolc, which mm-hmm. is Bridget's Day, February 1st,
mm-hmm.
Groundhog's Day.
So it's commitment.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're at Ostara.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it's the first of two balance points of the year. The other equinox is, of course, the autumnal equinox,
right.
September 21st, 22nd. And in our system, we kind of look at, no, I don't mean ours versus theirs, I just mean looking from a Taoist Wiccan perspective.
Right.
There's a mythic journey that began at Yule with our rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole wheel of the year is really meant for us to see that we're on a hero's quest for wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another way that we look at the wheel of the year from a mythological and archetypal.
And you actually make this practical because you use this as a way of coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are three major things missing from the culture: belonging, balance, and empowerment.
Those are pretty basic things that we're missing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's hard to argue that we're not missing those things.
Right. Right.
Mm.
And
belonging,
now,
balance, and empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to help us with that?
Well, I often suggest that while our circumstances may feel as sensitives or witches or shamans, that we're kind of cut off and isolated from quote-unquote mainstream, I do encourage you to begin to run the experiment of either Taoist Wicca or something else that gathers you together with your friends and invites you to come into the intention of drawing like-minded people, so that when you are having an extraordinary experience,
mm-hmm.
a shamanic experience, an expanded spiritual or psychic experience, that you have friends to turn to and go, wow, this thing happened.
Yeah.
And they can go, wow, that's really cool. And I had not exactly the same thing, but I have a similar thing, and here's my weird experience.
Right.
Because then we can kind of gather the community. We kind of went sensitives, medicine people went underground in the Inquisition. Europe and the New World. Remember, we forget that there was a dreadful Inquisition here when the Spanish invaded the indigenous people.
Right.
It was equally as horrific as anything we produced in
Europe. If not worse.
You know, when you add in the diseases, absolutely.
Yeah, and it was wholesale. It wasn't just the medicine people. It was wholesale genocide over here.
Right. So today, you know, as with every show, I try to mix in a little, let's look at the culture, because we're swimming in a polluted pool.
Right.
And none of us can really be well or embrace this wholeness that we desire if it's being withheld from someone else, or if we're withholding it from ourselves.
Right. And we have cultural constructs that make it difficult for us to not withhold it from ourselves and make it difficult for us to serve it to others.
Right.
Yeah, it's hard. It is hard.
Right. So it's a time of balance, and to look at from a Taoist Wicca perspective, if the wheel is a Tao, then we really get an active contemplation upon the balance as we have equal day and night.
Mm-hmm.
There's not only a literal astronomic alignment that our ancestors across the planet have been marking with solar and lunar calendars for thousands of years. But so it was recognized that something significant happened. This is also the full planting ceremony where at Yule you were reborn with an intention. And you have now made the Roman numerals of an action plan, an outline for Imbolc. And now as we come into Ostara, this is very much about calling in the allies, about planting and, you know, with a full awareness of the crop in its entirety. What are the action plans? If you want carrots, you have to plant carrots.
Yeah.
And you have to commit to tending carrots throughout the process. It means weeding, watering, all of that.
Right.
And, you know, in sacred gardening, it would be about talking to the spirit of the plant.
Right.
Creating the acknowledgement that this is a created life as well.
Right.
This is
a divine expression.
As are we, namaste.
Right.
I behold the divine within you. You behold the divine in me.
It's interesting to be reminded that that's an equally legitimate thing to say to your carrots.
Yes.
It's actually really useful to realize that. It is a divine, an expression of the divine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all life, well, all things are, right? And when we have the intention to cultivate life in whatever form we choose to, whether it be a vegetable garden or animal husbandry or even cultivating the vitality of our passions, of our art or our sacred mission or whatever, it is a divine expression, and there's a powerful balance in saying namaste.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. It balances it's no longer I, it's I, thou.
That, yes.
And that's a big deal.
Yes.
and finding that in every corner, right? Realizing that that's available in every breath, in every interaction, is extraordinarily powerful. Yes. At least I've found it so.
Yes.
But I'm only recently, you know, sort of in this moment, thinking about it as relating to Ostara and the balance of the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I watched a show called Naked and Afraid.
Oh, yeah. I've seen advertisements for
that. Yeah. They really literally dump people in the most hostile environments. And they are naked and they are given one tool and it's one man and woman who don't know each other.
Holy cow.
And extremely hostile. By a river in the Amazon, for example.
Hmm.
You know, that kind of hostile. And then 21 days later, they have to make it to an extraction site. And only their film crew practices non-involvement. Other than to just catch.
Right, it's like the prime directive on Star Trek.
Yes. But I watch it. First of all, of course, the quintessential anthropologist in me watches it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
But the reason I bring it up is that there was a very poignant scene in which they had been 8 or 9, maybe 10 days without food. They've been eating grubs and things like that, but that's the size of it. And they have the opportunity to kill an electric eel. And the guy is getting revved and he's calling it a bitch and he's, you know, he's getting macho pumped.
Right.
And the woman says, can we take a moment? This is a life force you're about to take here. And she actually told him she was offended by his attitude before he killed it. And, you know, he kind of didn't quite understand it. And he said, okay, thank you. Prepare to die. And he could tell she was very upset with him. And they had gotten along very, very well in this extremely hostile environment.
Yeah.
And he goes privately to his camera, and you can tell he's really rocked that he upset her.
Yeah.
And that he had said that he had this kind of hostile side of him that comes out every once in a while. And he wasn't hostile to her.
No.
He was simply hostile toward his kill in that moment, bringing all that chi forward. He used anger to move it.
Right.
And it made him think. And he apologized to her afterward. And then on the after show, they asked him, would he kill anything in the same way? And he said, well, I'm not actually a hunter per se. I don't do it for sport. I only do it for food. But I will say that she gave me a whole new spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yay!
So it does
go back to slowly but surely, you know, the earth waves and the reverence with which we used to approach and deal with our environment and other beings in it.
Mm.
We're very, very different.
And finding that path back to balance.
Right.
You know, it's interesting because namaste to other life forms isn't just balance. It's also belonging.
Absolutely. Yes.
It's also belonging, isn't it? Right. And you start to realize that the separation that we're experiencing as humans from the natural world is one that we chose.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't one that's real. It's not imposed on us by nature itself.
Right.
It's only the nonsense of our head and our belief system that makes that so.
Yes.
And what a toxic consequence, huh? Yikes.
Mm.
Every time I think
about
it.
Well, then we've created a culture in which it is separation. I think it's partially a product of reductionism, and the reductionism sits so well with patriarchy because you've got this divide and conquer. And, you know, science uses it as let's divide and explore.
Right.
But as I've probably said before, there's a problem with that because the minute you dissect the frog,
it's not a frog
you can't
anymore.
Find the chi.
Right.
And it's ludicrous to declare chi does not exist because you have killed the frog. Those two things don't have anything to do with it.
Well, I think the whole lens of reductionism is, it's a mechanical lens in a lot of
Very
ways,
mechanical.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't. It's a particle model, not a field model.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that reality behaves as both particle and field. And mm-hmm. one might speculate reasonably that the particle nature of reality is actually just there for our convenience to observe it. It's actually not intrinsically part of its nature.
To be observed.
Right. It is
inherently participatory.
Yes. Right. It's inherently participatory, but it's a field. It's not really a collection of particles.
Uh-huh.
It's really a field that will dress up as particles for our convenience.
And
what I mean.
For our intention.
And for our intention, per our
mm-hmm.
intention. Yeah. That's
mm-hmm.
right. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's a key thing for our conversation today, because we're still kind of looking at, and as the light grows, we're getting more and more of a picture of a Rorschach test of the universe to see how we're going to connect the dots. And at summer solstice, it's the biggest, grandest pictures, what you believe about the universe and so
mm-hmm.
forth.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you still have to look at some fundamental assumptions you're making in your current belief system. We talked about this earlier, whether or not, you know, we agreed that it was better to simply assume that the universe is supporting us even if
right.
it doesn't look like it,
right.
because it is so much easier to get up in the morning with that attitude.
Right. Yeah.
And nothing, you know, I mean, one could argue that point till the cows come home. I mean, there's no way to prove it. It's just a choice and assumption we make. However,
yeah.
the universe reflects back to us according to our assumption.
Well, so in one sense we can say the universe reflects back to us according to our assumptions, and that if we make the assumption that it's a benign, benevolent universe that's actually seeking to respond to our desire, then it makes perfect sense for us to be projecting that notion out into the universe. And in the other case, that the universe isn't like that, and we have all of this adversity that's being put in our path for reasons we don't understand, what's the most productive model for
right.
for interpreting that? Navigating those circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And assuming that the universe is out to get you doesn't really do you any good. Right? It doesn't solve any problems.
What do you do if you're right?
What do you do if you're right? Right? Like, better to, you know, I find it's better to look for the value in whatever is happening, even if it's not pleasant, because that allows me to stay present enough to what's happening to really A, get value out of it,
mm-hmm.
and B, understand it well enough to shift it,
mm-hmm.
right? The stepping away from what's happening is something that we do when we're in pain. You know, we numb, we hide, we contract. And, you know, it's not to say that there isn't very reasonable physiological and evolutionary advantage to doing that, but we do it way more than we have to, I
mm-hmm.
find. I find that we do it way more than we have to. And, you know, lately I'm quoting this little experience that I had in Santa Cruz the other night, walking along the shore, the cliffside, waves pounding against the rocks, and it was full moon, and it was just gorgeous, breeze blowing, it was amazing. But I was cold.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this dilemma because I didn't have anything, I had a light jacket in the car, and that's all I had. So I had this dilemma. Do I want to go back to the car and sit in the car,
mm-hmm.
or do I want to enjoy this evening?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm definitely not going back into the car.
Mm-hmm.
I want to enjoy this evening,
mm-hmm.
but I'm cold. So what do I do about that? And the first thing I did was I said, well, I'm not going to die. this feeling cold thing is not going to kill me. It's not physiologically not going to damage me in any way. So what I'm really experiencing is discomfort. And once I shifted away from trying to not experience the discomfort to experiencing the discomfort as intimately as I could so that I could understand what to do about it, I found ways to warm myself up and to be present to the wind and the surf and the air temperature that were not incompatible with my physiology,
mm-hmm.
right? So I was able to be quite successful in staying present to what was happening and saying yes to what was available,
mm-hmm.
even though there was discomfort in it. And I learned a bunch of lessons about my body and,
mm-hmm.
You know, and had a fabulous evening enjoying the moonlight, being present, loving what is, even in the presence of discomfort, was a great opportunity,
mm-hmm.
turned out.
Well, that is precisely a practice of Wicca, you know, is in so far as to wick means to shape or to shift energy or consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one thing to mold energy into a form and then another to shift the form. So that's hence the term shape and shift.
Mm-hmm.
And so to kind of drift in and out of a kind of a witness consciousness that allows you to take in greater observations.
Right.
And allow that moment to be filled with, you know, some might argue a hypersensitivity, hyper-awareness.
Yeah.
But that's also a characteristic of trance. So it's a minute, you know, you were on the full moon and, you know, receiving a teaching.
Oh, absolutely.
Awesome.
It's fantastic.
Awesome.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and how long ago was that?
That was like the full moon in March.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like 2-3 days ago as of recording this.
Okay. So you can see how the universe is beginning to prepare you for your specific adapted lessons
right.
for the spring equinox.
Okay.
As far as your personal lens, what's balance, imbalance, how do you perceive what's balance and out of balance?
Right. And what one of the things that I can say with confidence is that discomfort does not mean out of balance.
Right, not always.
It's really an invitation to discovery. Discomfort, I'm finding, is an invitation to discovery. You know, and this is also something that's been happening over the last few months is I've sort of been in a shifted space, shifted place. I'm house sitting. I'm recently divorced. There's a big emptiness
mm-hmm.
in my life that. There's a habitual longing, right? There's longing for things that are not there,
mm-hmm.
that are, that I'm looking forward to having and looking forward to experiencing, but aren't there. And one of the lessons that I got was that there is wisdom to be harvested in the longing.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
It's not that I should go out and satisfy this longing instantly, but rather that I should allow the longing, and not that I should numb it or meditate it away even, but rather that being present to it will illuminate things for me.
Right.
And so discomfort, emptiness, the presence of desire and the presence of longing are not things that are intrinsically out of balance that need to be balanced, but rather that they are an aspect of balance.
Yes.
They're an aspect of that. And this is the interesting thing about the Tao, actually.
Yes.
I keep learning, you know, Somebody once said to me, the Tao that can be experienced is not the true Tao.
Exactly.
Or the Tao that can be explained. Sorry, the Tao that can be explained is not the true Tao.
From the Tao Te Ching.
Mm-hmm. And I just like the more I investigate, the more I realize, yeah, actually, that's really true. It's really, there's always another layer of interplay between active and receptive, between light and dark, between illumination and shadow.
Right.
In our personality, in our presumptions about the world, in our perception, our perceptual capacity and frame and sometimes when I'm in a really great spot, I can move right up to the line,
mm-hmm.
and sort of surf the edge, mm-hmm. between the masculine and the feminine, the light and the dark, the active and receptive, and I can watch it move and, transform before my very eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was active principle just a millisecond ago before I had this perception, and now it's the receptive principle. And that, it's like fascinating. Balance is not scales.
Right. Nor is it a 50-50 proposition.
No, it's actually what I'm recognizing is that balance is the willingness to surf the underside of the wave,
mm-hmm.
to literally take your whole perceptual frame and flip all the bits.
Right. Now, what's cool about the Wheel of the Year is intrinsically the Sabbats do that.
Right.
You look at the two solstices, for example, they're opposite to each other. We were reborn at Yule with an intention. The opposite of intention, I believe, is accountability. It's one thing to have this grand, very nice, elastic plan, tra-la, tra-la. But by half of the year gone, have you done?
You asked.
Right.
How have you participated in your ask?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Did you ante up?
Not quite. Suddenly, this radio show is not quite as comfortable as I thought it was going to be. But we're not there yet.
We're not. But you can see that the light is inching us up. As the sun gets greater, we move into chakras with more awareness.
Hmm.
And then with more awareness, then of course comes more accountability.
Right.
Inevitably. Yes,
for sure.
But nevertheless, that was just an illustration of how the two opposite Sabbats are always mirrors for each other.
Mm-hmm.
The winter solstice is a view from the underworld.
Mm-hmm.
And the summer solstice is the teachers.
Right.
The upper world.
Okay, so we're in...
We're at, so if we followed it along, you would have commitment at Imbolc.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have balance and what's in balance. And then, of course, when you focus on the balance, you also see in sharp relief what's out of balance,
mm-hmm.
and a calling of the allies and a clarity about what you're planting, the ABCs.
Okay, so if Imbolc is commitment, what is Ostara? Is Ostara a balance between commitment and action? Is it a balance between commitment and openness, between
both.
It's both, right?
Yeah.
Cause we want to both have the active principle plan, but we also want to remain receptive to what flows.
Right.
Is that kind of the idea?
Right. You're calling in the allies from the seen and unseen.
Mm-hmm. And why are we doing that at Ostara?
At Ostara, because if we go back to looking at the Wheel of the Year as this mythic quest,
mm-hmm.
you have the discernment of the problem, the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You often have, and so you kind of argue with yourself around Yule, do I accept this challenge? Do I take it on? And so forth. And then comes the commitment.
Right.
Now comes the action plan. The Roman numerals that go the ABCs that go under each Roman numeral commitment you formed. And that means you're now thinking in terms of specific tasks. Yeah. What needs to be done toward this? If I want carrots, then I don't have to obtain carrot seeds.
Right. Right. Step one, obtain carrot seeds.
Step one, yeah.
Yeah. And there's more than one step. Right?
Exactly. Exactly. That's why now at Ostara, you're laying in the ABCs of that action plan so that your implementation can be, you know, a checklist.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but sometimes you don't have alone the capacity to do everything.
Mm.
And it's like, you know, I need a publisher.
Okay.
I could self-publish.
Mm-hmm.
I'm aware that there are other things and I'm going to have to choose. And my preference would be to have a publisher.
Mm. So now you have to go look for one.
Now I have to go look for one.
Right. So you are obligated to participate.
Yes.
At once when, okay. So this is actually kind of an interesting, flow. At Ostara, at Imbolc, we are identifying
and forging those commitments. So we're not only seeing it with our sixth chakra, identifying the creative
right
task, but we're forging it in the third, in the fire of the third chakra, the will,
right,
the fortitude.
Mm-hmm.
And, dedication.
Right. And so then at Ostara, we're actually kicking the wheels, removing the chocks from the wheels and starting to roll this puppy down the
exactly.
highway.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
So you have gone from theory and research and the resonance within you
right.
to know what to commit to.
Right.
Knowing words are magic.
Mm-hmm.
Your word is your magic.
Right.
So moving word from word magic, now we're going into deed magic, you know. Now
right.
we're going into the sheer effort and fortitude and that digging in the dirt to plant the carrot seeds
right.
and so forth, you know. So every single, from laying out your garden, what are you going to plant where? You know, so the design of your garden, everything kind of now it comes into a trip to Home Depot.
Right. And this is a transition from the more ephemeral to the more grounded,
concrete.
The more concrete. And why is this the time of year for that? What is it? Why is it? It must be easier for us to do that at this time of year.
Well, we have all of nature is waking up. And
nature's actually rubber meet the road.
Nature is spurring us forward.
And nature doesn't do a lot of navel gazing when it comes to when it's springtime. It's like when the seeds are germinated and the sun is out, they're like
they're going for it. Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
and so what?
It's not going. I wonder if I should really try to.
Maybe I should wait. So why do we do that? What is our wound that causes us to want to be passive, to want to stay in the realm of ideation instead of putting the shoulder to the wheel?
Well, I think on one level, humankind has gotten lazy. No?
It's not so much a matter of survival as it used to be.
No, it is not. You know, I hearken back to that Naked and Afraid show.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Man, there was a lot of work to do. You know, just for simple things. If you wanted a lodging, you had to build it.
Yeah.
If you wanted food, you had to build a trap or, you know, and then you had to go check your traps and... And if you wanted water, you had to figure out how to build a fire so you could purify the water. And so absolutely, there was nothing we could go to the supermarket, buy that was provided for in some other means. and somehow sterilized from the thorns that sit on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in a way, nature doesn't coddle.
No.
And we've figured out ways to coddle ourselves.
Exactly. Exactly.
Long after our swaddling days are over.
Yes. We're insulated constantly.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, one of the survivors mentioned, you know, clothing is your second skin.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
So really, you know, we've taken incredible steps to separate us from nature. You know, we paved our streets and sidewalks and patios and...
Yeah.
So, I think the impetus to go and do, and so we see people playing more. And that's another side of the myth, is that the god and goddess are now children playing together. And so there's this spirit of play. And what we like to do in our circles is, this is the ritual that we bring our favorite kid food.
Mm-hmm.
To share.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. You know, and sometimes we dye eggs and use them in the ritual, and sometimes we do chocolate eggs. And chicks and bunnies, of course, go back to, they were fertility symbols that came along in this time of year. And the term Ostara or Estra was for a Saxon goddess of the dawn and new beginnings and the East. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting that it was adopted in Europe as Easter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know, a kid 18, 8 or 80 that hasn't said, what am I supposed to be happy about Jesus' death and resurrection that I play hide and go seek with eggs and bunnies? What is they have to do.
Yeah, well, how does that connect?
With each other. Yeah. And, you know, because the man's being brutalized. What is there happy about that story? Goodness.
Well, yeah.
That's a whole other conversation. But nevertheless, you know, the dichotomy of how we celebrate it as kids and then what it's supposed to mean. And... and you can kind of find underneath it that it was spring was a kind of resurrection myth and of itself.
Sure, yeah.
And so, you know, if we're looking for common denominators, and I'm a big fan of that.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, all of my work is really based on that, is to kind of look at similarities and not see differences as problematic, really.
Right.
But these bunnies and chicks and spring frolics were all ancient fertility rites that honored the equinox.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so again, you know, when you look at what happened with the depaganization of Europe, you know, it was the country folk that suffered the greatest under that, because they were the ones closest to the land.
Yeah.
And so frequently the church would kind of say, Ostara, Easter. Okay, you come to Mass, then you can go have your celebration. You know, and that's where some traditions, like the term Lammas, it actually means loaf mass. So it was a time when we were trying to coexist with the church.
Right. And Lammas is the celebration in August.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Okay, so play.
Play.
How do we use play to serve us in this time of commitment and action?
Mm-hmm. Well, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
So I've been told. So I've been advised.
So we're invited to look at our lives Especially in this country, because we don't take a standard country vacation holiday. You know, the French go off in August and so forth. We don't relax much in this culture. And what's worse, thank you very much, Puritans, it was frowned upon. Not only just actively do your chores, but it was really frowned upon to take any time off from anything other than the Sabbath.
Yeah, or to take any pleasure in anything, really.
Right, right.
Like what is with that? So we have not only have disconnected ourselves from nature, we've disconnected ourselves from the inherent health effects and balancing effects that come from play and healthy pleasure.
Right.
And I say healthy pleasure very specifically because we certainly know how to indulge ourselves.
Right,
with intoxicants and food that is, you know, loaded with fat and sugar and so on and so forth. It's not like we don't know. We've established very clearly that we can go find pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't actually enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make us feel better.
Right.
It makes us feel worse.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad.
Well, it ain't good.
for our pursuit of pleasure to make us feel worse is really kind of a crime.
Mm-hmm.
It's an abomination.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we have institutionalized guilt.
Well, that too.
Along with, and so consequently, even if it might be healthy, especially in moderation, a number of things need not be as harmful as we have made them.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
However, thanks again to the Puritans, we have this, you know, don't you dare crack a smile in any part of your life.
Yeah.
You know, God forbid you would enjoy it.
Right. Crazy.
So there's... I think that's one of the beauties of Wicca, is it kind of says, all acts of pleasure are mine, say the goddess. And so there is, of course, you know, you look at pagan lifestyles prior to monotheism and institutionalized religions and priestly castes. You had an attempt by the medicine man and woman to include the tribe in ritual, to include them in a transcendent personal experience with the divine.
And of ecstasy,
yes.
Really, right?
And everybody could cry for a vision, so to speak. That was not the private domain of the shaman particularly. Although they were better at it or more practiced at it, it did not mean that anyone in the tribe could not have access to the divine.
Right.
So this, what emerged is kind of a way to, it's not just to institutionalize the established belief system, but to form an elitism around it. And one of the ways it's particularly helpful is if you rob your the people in your parish or in your community of their personal right to their own to spiritual expression.
Right.
Because creativity and spirituality go hand in hand.
Okay. All right. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, I want to talk about play, creativity, spirituality, and inspiration as part of Ostara.
Great.
Okay, we'll be right back.
At Firefly Willows, LIVE, we're working hard to be your trusted source for fun, enlightening, and heart-centered information and community. And we're passionate about the art of transformative media, the new leading edge of communication in our highly connected, media-rich world. If you're passionate about facilitating change and you have gifts or ideas you'd like to share, come join us. host a show, or be a guest, or connect us to an amazing speaker or teacher whose message is too good to miss. There's always room for courageous, knowledgeable changemakers, inspired artists, and new ideas. Let us know you're interested. Send an email to info@fireflywillows.com. We're Firefly Willows, LIVE, helping you find and shine your inner light.
Welcome back. You're listening to Discovering Taoist Wicca, the Ostara Show, with your host, Susie Lady Redhawk Peltier. I'm John Carosella. So, Susie, before the break, you were talking about the role of personal expression with the divine, and we were talking about pleasure and play. Mm-hmm. How do these things connect to, how do they all connect? Because there's a role for creativity, there's a role for play, in stimulating our inspiration and our connection to spirit. And, you know, we also talked about this being the time of year when we call on our allies, mm-hmm. and this process of commitment and so on. So how does this bring this together for us? Mm-hmm.
Well, let's remember that the word recreation is actually re-creation.
Recreation.
R-E-C-R-E-A-T-I-O-N. And so there's a refreshment in relaxation, a refreshment in pleasure, and the stimulation of the senses.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm convinced that being psychic is actually the open five senses synergizing to bump you up into the sixth sense.
Mm.
So rather than taking a scientific approach and saying, it's to the exclusion of knowing from all other means, but it is the amplification of knowing through all of the other means.
Mm.
There is a synergy of those five senses. But if you are working, then you're only your left brain is getting stimulated. Not really your right brain.
Yeah.
Not really that ancient part of yourselves that needs smells and tactile experiences to awaken and remind you that you're alive. And that connection to your vital life force energy, your vitality, if you will.
It's like the power of contemplating a flower.
Yes.
Right, when you actually
yes.
take the time to smell it, touch it, look at it.
Yes.
Absorb it all. You can't help but kind of be spellbound,
mm-hmm.
Entranced
mm-hmm.
into a state of excited but tranquil at the same
mm-hmm.
time, awe.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yes. And so that is an opening moment, I believe.
Right. And wonderment is very much an experience of childhood.
It is an experience of childhood. How does wonderment relate to play?
Well, I think it's an extension. Play is an extension of wonderment. It, you know, we come in with an active imagination because our imagination is the bridge between the body, mind, and spirit. And then systematically the culture says, oh, it's just your imagination, just being a minimizer in
mm-hmm,
that,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, and that's a subtle minimizer either.
No, for sure.
So we have that impulse to be creative, tamped down.
Mm.
And we grow less and less, or I should say more and more desensitized and oversensitized. And if we are not encountering the natural world and the elements very much with a kind of a namaste chi to chi acknowledgement, then you become removed from that. It's like that chi is the connection. It's the dark matter almost, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so if we become absorbed in our thought processes, then our capacities to be, which is where we get starlight consciousness and trance experiences and transcendent experiences. The left brain gets over-refined and over-exhausted, burns out the adrenals, and then we can less and less experience vitality and being our vital life force energy and the connection of the rest of the vital world. So you have less and less capacity to come into communion with that rose you're contemplating.
And it's kind of a drag because we're, at the same time we're atrophying our right brain. It's not getting any practice.
Yes, right. So that's the reason that, that practicing ritual is very useful, because you set up a systematic, repeatable stimulation of each of the senses.
Mm.
And it builds neural pathways,
right,
that trigger pleasant experiences that actually serve your well-being.
Mm-hmm.
So on a brain physiology standpoint.
Right. So you're healthier.
Right. You're healthier. Mm. You're healthier. So when we talk about, most of us work too hard and we don't play nearly enough. And when we do play, we want to play as hard as we work.
Yeah, I know that's
true. That's so young.
It is,
that,
really.
You know, as opposed to, I'm going to sit with my friend, see how the conversation evolves. And I have no agenda with the conversation.
I love the whole thing that I've been dealing with now is like realizing how rare it is that I have no agenda.
Right.
And how limiting that is
to have an agenda.
To not be in a place to not have no agenda is very limiting, right? If you have an agenda all the time, then the only thing that you're open to is what you want.
That's right.
And there's a whole great mystery out there that you have no idea that you could want.
And the difficulty is that you are now narrowing in what you are going to call as support.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about that.
And we had an earlier conversation about how many times, you know, when we come upon these Sabbaths, we look at our lives and we think, oh, this is out of balance. I'm not where I belong. Or it feels like the universe is actively pushing me in a direction I don't want to go. And what's wrong with this picture?
Mm-hmm.
And we either go, it's either me, or it's the universe.
Right.
And we don't necessarily leave place or room for a third option.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you're perfect,
right,
where you belong, and the universe is still supporting you.
Right.
You know, and I personally don't know how to wrap around that.
No, well, this reminds me of the story that I heard from a friend of mine about the nature of buffalo medicine, right? The wandering path of the buffalo was that, if you try to take that straight line,
mm-hmm,
and demand that the universe give you that straight line to your quote unquote destination, there are a couple of possibilities that you should be aware of. And one is that you'll get to your destination, but you'll get there too early and no one else will be there. And so the party that you expected to walk into won't even have been set up yet. And so you'll be like, I guess I was mistaken. There is no party here.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you'll miss the party. And the other possibility, another possibility is that you will get there and the party will be happening, but you will have missed an experience along the way that would have made your experience at the party way more fulfilling.
Right.
Right. So it's this willingness to, as I've been saying it recently, stay present,
mm-hmm,
and say yes. Stay present to what is,
mm-hmm,
right? Don't try to say I shouldn't be here, because this is where you are. So clearly, this is where you are. This is where you should be, because this is where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And say yes to what is being offered. Not as a way of capitulating to circumstances that wound you, but as a way of saying, this is what's being offered. These are, in fact, the tools at my disposal. This is, in fact, what the universe is offering me.
Or there might still be some more choices that you have not.
Well,
you know, it's the difference between looking straight ahead. You have a limited peripheral vision.
Right.
If you turn your head, you have an increased peripheral vision. And if you look both ways, you could take in a lot of information.
Right.
But I think we have to recognize that, you know, in Alan Watts' book, The Taboo on Knowing Who You Are, I'm going to radically condense him and bless you, Alan. He kind of said that human beings are in this dilemma of being, of looking at life through a chink in the fence. And we see a cat, but we only, the chink is so small, we only see the cat's ass. And in the arrogance of being human, we think the problem's with the cat.
Right.
So I think...
Right.
So the way this applies to Ostara is you do have to recognize that some of the way you choose to view the big picture, what are major arcana cards and karmic players, and what are minor arcana cards, personal choices.
Mm-hmm.
And recognize that you are kind of working your way up to this high point where a maximum picture will be revealed. But that you can also see that that's really only a Rorschach test for where you are right now, because you come around to it again and it's, you know, you're going to possibly connect the dots differently.
Right. It's always a combination of what's actually happening and the lens that you're seeing it through.
Right. And if nothing else, each of these Sabbaths is an opportunity to examine and refine your lens a little bit.
Mm.
And because sometimes we can't do much about changing the circumstances, all we can really do is shape or shift or reframe our perspective.
Right.
On
yeah.
what's happening.
Yeah, that's right.
And to wick is to do that. You know, both the mundane questions and problems we face, that's the coaching piece of it. And then to recognize it's cultivating this capacity to shape shift and step out and closer in to our own lens. So we at least recognize we're looking through.
Yeah, then we recognize
glasses.
The glasses that we're looking at. We examine these glasses. Let me see how, not just let me see what's out there, but let me look at the lens that I'm using to look at.
Exactly. Exactly. And,
yeah.
And at an equinox, you have this beautiful still point, this pause for a reboot when things are momentarily equal. And then you can kind of see, what's out of balance in my life? And is everything, or do I want to assume that everything is in balance?
Well, so how do we do that? How do we figure out what's out of balance and what's in balance but uncomfortable?
It's probably by degree of discomfort. You know, if your heart and your whole gut is screaming. Then, you know, yeah.
It's out of balance.
But then there's a distance here between recognizing the question and figuring out the answer. You know, mm-hmm. right at the moment, you know, yeah, you're developing strategies and action plans and a bit of, okay, if I have this problem, what are my solutions?
Mm-hmm.
What are my choices? You know, and sometimes, of course, you can't see beyond the turn. You have to just kind of choose one and do it with the best of intentions and the faith and, you know, having passed your runes or whatever.
Right. And this is also part of why we call in our allies, too, I guess.
Absolutely.
Right.
They,
in theory, lend a hand in this process.
Yes. The seen and the unseen. So, you know, recently I met a spa director with a great deal of of Foresight. And so we're going to be partnering up to see if we can bring some Reiki into a downtown hotel, you know.
Yeah.
And I'd have been 2 months ago, you know, if you'd have asked me when I stepped back into corporate, I'd say, are you kidding? I sure don't see that in the horizon.
Right.
But you see, you know, I met a new ally.
Right.
And we, and you know, who knows where we can take it.
She
needs allies.
She needs allies too. Right,
yeah.
Right. It's a team. It's a team. We're not alone. So in this process, where do we direct our attention during this time of Astara? What do we?
I think balance. You know, this question of balance can be a contemplation, a meditation. And you can be out for a run and contemplating balance. You can be, you know, driving and contemplating balance, you know. It does not have to be so zoned out that you're totally ineffective. It becomes a walking meditation on this is the focus for the next 6 weeks or 3 weeks, 2 weeks in.
We've
got another 4 weeks before it turns into Beltane, which is about self-love. Talk about another form of balance. So in a way, we can kind of say, and the reason I chose the term Taoist Wicca was that I wanted to convey a focal point balance.
Right.
But I also wanted to be clear that that's balance as each of you define it for yourselves.
And it's never static.
And it's never static. The whole picture of the Tao, that squiggly line, represents a constant flux.
Yeah.
But it's intention is always toward balance or rebalance.
Yeah.
And that there's, and so moving chi is the form of balance. But you see, culturally, we have sought to set everything in stone and make to concretize, systemize, dogmatize.
to make everything fixed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we complain when it all comes apart.
So we have a desire for fixedness because it gives us some kind of predictability.
Mm-hmm.
But the price of predictability is friction and resistance and discomfort, actually.
Yes.
Right? Because we're not able to flow with, we don't say yes to what's being offered. We say yes to our fixed institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Our institutionalized yeses override our opportunistic yeses.
Yeah. Right.
And Astara is an opportunity for us to take a second look at that and
To reintroduce fun and play, because there's our creativity. So
right.
When it comes to coming up with the solutions that we need to allow those answers to be sourced from a different place. Because when they're sourced from that right brain, collective consciousness, God, Goddess, what divine voice within us. It's not only, you know, the Latin for heart is curor, cur. And that is the root word of courage.
Yeah.
So when we can source, get quiet enough, get relaxed enough to allow the beauty, especially at this time of year, to permeate our consciousness and permeate our senses and so forth, then we can wake up. And there's your wonderment.
Mm.
Because it's an inherently wonder-filled universe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But the challenge is, so long as we are out of balance or not even focusing upon the balance, we can't even invoke the balance.
Yeah, we don't even know that we don't even know that balance is a thing.
That's needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because from balance, you would get a sense of belonging, even if you were by yourself or with yourself.
Because you would belong to the universe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it would be easier to build community.
Hmm. One thing we didn't talk a lot about, is empowerment.
Mm-hmm. Well, inadvertently, we've been talking about it all day, though, because when you plug back into the divine, that namaste, there isn't, I can't think of anything more empowering than to remember that I'm a child of the divine.
Yeah, it's true, actually. Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, and the other thing, the other empowering things that we've been talking about today are the action plan mm-hmm. that comes from Ostara and mm-hmm. and the balance that comes from, you know, not just the thinking, imagining, but also the committing and doing.
Right.
Right. It is empowering. It's empowering to accomplish.
Right.
It's empowering to take this, you know, to go to the store and buy the seeds. It's empowering to dig in the soil and plant them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Those, every step is one step of further empowerment
mm-hmm.
for us as individuals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Well, I think if there's some, something I'd like to kind of leave you with, you know, because I always try to bring an intention statement from our ritual.
Right.
So I think if it's okay with you, I'd like to share Marianne Williamson's words that were given by Nelson Mandela.
Yes.
Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? You are the child of the Creator. Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are born to make manifest the glory of the Creator that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence encourages others.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that great?
That, you know, our presence encourages others. That's such a simple thing to say. And I think our egos, the fear of rejection, the fear of failure does so much to limit the light that we are so capable of shining. And play does just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
It allows us to drop the fear.
And reconnect with one of our greatest recognitions of our divinity, which is our creativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. We don't, and when we build a, and when we were kids and took a refrigerator box and made it into a castle or something, in order to talk to us, you had to get in the game.
It's true.
Excuse me, I'm Lady Red Hawk.
Right.
Where's your sword, Balord? And you're here, I have it here.
Yeah.
So And we don't realize that everything from the stock market to politics is really a constructed game. It's a refrigerator box that we've agreed upon. It means a certain thing, you know, the value of our stocks, the political agreement
absolutely.
Of nations and the borders of nations and so forth, you know. It's all a refrigerator box.
It is. And on that note, I think that's a powerful note to leave with people, that it's a refrigerator box out there,
yeah.
Folks. And make it what you will.
And have fun.
And have fun. All right, Susie, so if people want to get to know you and your work a little bit more, where do we direct them?
Please go to www.susiepeltier.com, SusiePeltier.com. I do a whole bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And it would be a pleasure to hear from you. And certainly you can email me through the site if you have questions you'd like me to address here on the show.
Right.
So thank you so much. Have a lovely, lovely equinox, everyone. Balance to you all. Yeah. Namaste.
Back at Beltane.